What's up, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of It's Brewing at McEwen. I am Adam Cartwright, and with me tonight is John Kaplan. John, man, how are you doing tonight?
It is a rainy day here in Ohio, but I'm ready to talk about some USF baseball. How about yourself, bud?
I'm doing well. It's been rainy all day in Tampa as well. And we are video today for the first time for me. John, I think this might be a couple times for you, but something that we are hoping that we are going to get to do more of, get to see our beautiful faces as we go through these podcasts. Tonight, me and John, we have a lot of games that we're going to talk about as we missed last week. Do apologize for that. My fault. Stomach bug is a bummer at times. But again, we're going to talk about all those games, and then we will do as we usually do. We'll look at the conference. We'll look at the standings. Me and John will make some picks. Final 11.7 rankings of the season came out today. We'll take a look at those as we're leading out. And then, we got a big series with ECU coming up. We'll look at that, but we'll get right into it. 2 weeks ago, we had a series against UTSA. Listen, UTSA is the best team in this conference. I think they've proven that week in and week out, this season. And that was no different when they played us. I do want to point out a couple of things about that UTSA series. The first one is going to be, as I start my share again, going to have to bear with us as we run this new program. It's going to be a trip for all of us fans. We're going to make it through, I promise. One thing I do want to point out with that is, UTSA has really run amok on Friday. They at the time before they played us, they had scored 11 or, 9-plus runs, I believe, in 5 weeks leading up to that. We allowed it to be 6 when they got 11 against us. I do want to point out that it was a lot of late damage. It really wasn't damage against Corey Braun. I believe he had only given up about 3 when he had left. And then after Friday, those were really close games. I believe we had the winning run come to the plate both Saturday and Sunday. These were not runaways. I do not believe that UTSA is far and away better than us. I think they were better than us that weekend. Hard to argue that point in any way, shape, or form. But I don't think it was far away. I think a few plays here and there, we win that series. I do want to point out Corey Kling had a really big outing in this one on Saturday. He came in and really shut them down if they had, a really hot start on Saturday. And that was really, really, really fun to see. But yeah, that's really all I have for UTSA series. Again, they were as advertised. I got to see them live. They can swing the bat. I believe one of their guys even got a conference player of the week for this week for his performance, primarily against us in Tampa. But the good news for Bulls fans is once that weekend got over, the Bulls really got hot, and it started with a huge win on a Tuesday night, May 6th, against the University of Florida. And, that was, again, like I said, that's going to turn it around for us. Gets us right back in the win column. It ends up being a little surprising, I think, in the end, 7-1 victory. Brandon Keister is going to end up picking up the win. But pitching is going to be kind of the talk as they held that Florida offense to 1 run. John, I'll kick it over to you now. What did you think when you were watching this game on Tuesday night?
I think we were all a little bit like, We thought we were going to have the 2 midweeks. We didn't know that the UNF game was going to be getting canceled, but we chatted about how, we're in the season of canceling for any known possible reason against UNF. But we had talked a couple weeks ago, we had highlighted the fact that we were going to have two midweek games. And what I was wondering was who the heck were we going to start, right? And I think – I was as floored as all of us when Lanning York gets the nod, right? This kid just comes out and absolutely deals. 4 innings pitched, 2 hits, 0 earned runs allowed. He didn't light up the K's, but he just got the job done. He was effective. He hit his spots. You really got to see his mix of pitches. And honestly, I was really impressed with it. we haven't seen York really get stretched out much past two innings this season. So it came as a shock to me to see Landon York come out and get stretched out and deal for four innings against a team. You know, you ask ball players. I've got a buddy who played for UF, and he's like, "Oh, midweeks don't matter." But it's like, it's still the same guys. You know, it's still a top 15 team in the nation right now based on RPI, and they're kind of dealing on all cylinders right now. They just beat Texas in a weekend series, so it's not like the JV squad plays in the midweek. So I was really impressed with this outing. You know, we got to, and then I want to talk a little bit about Brandon Keyser and Nathan Longoria. You know, we'll get to them a little bit more throughout the show, but haven't really been bringing them up a whole lot, you know, for one reason or another. But, you know, Keister was super effective, only allowing one hit in an inning and two thirds. And then in Longoria just saying, "I'm here," you know, with three and a third, you know, striking out four. He ended up getting, you know, pitcher of the week in the American Athletic Conference this week. And I think his batting average against was literally zero for the week. He didn't allow – he had three and a third perfect innings against Florida, and that's not easy to do. You know, it's not an easy place to play when you go to Gainesville. And across the board, I was thrilled. You know, a little bit higher on the walk count than we normally are because we're leading the conference and walks allowed, but – other than that, man, I have nothing but positive marks for how the pitching looked against Florida.
Yeah, you know, you bring up Aiden Longoria. He really had a return to form performance. He got rewarded for it in that conference pitcher of the week. You really think that it was his performance tonight that really won that award for him, because, again, it was against, you know, the voters looking at it the same way you are. It is a midweek, but typically that, you know, midweek madness or midweeks don't matter, that typically comes from the pitching side of things.
Right.
Teams are tend to, you know, they're trying to save their arms. They're not saving anybody in the lineup, more or less. They're, you know, you're going to get 8 to 9 of the, you know, the guys that you're going to see on the weekend, and they're not taking pitches off. They're trying to hit. So, again, that was good to see. Again, the one run against that lineup, absolutely fantastic. I agree with you about Keister. And I think Keister's going to be important for us as we go into the tournament, because he's our only left-handed reliever. And other than Braun, you know, he's our only left-handed arm. And so him being hot and being good is going to help us with some of these lineups that tend to be a little left-handed heavy. Well, we could not win without some offense, and we did get some offense in this one. Lance Triple picks up three hits. Also multi-hits games from Rafael Betancourt and Marcus Brodell. And Matt Rose comes in as a pinch hitter and picks up two hits in this one. 12 strikeouts, little high, but again, you know, it is Florida. Even their off guys are probably going to have some pretty good stuff. You know, they were wild, you know, in the beginning with picking up some walks, but they seem to settle down. In the end, though, 7 runs, gets the job done every time. What'd you think?
I want to start by giving a little tip of the cap to our boy Bobby Boeser. I just hate seeing him going 0-for-4. I lost about 0 minutes of sleep because of it. But no, I mean, it was kind of an across the board. We didn't have one guy that was other than, like you just said, Lance Triple with three hits against former rival University. I don't know if that got his blood flowing a little bit, possibly, you know, facing off against an old rival in the Gators. But he had three hits on the day, really kind of set the stage, you know, he didn't have many RBIs, but he did have a run scored. He just had three isolated hits on the day. And then, you know, we had a couple producers in Marcus Bodell and Pruitt with some major RBIs, but it was just kind of like all hands on deck and just a good offensive performance, really. You know, I think Stuart Puckett is one of the only ones, and Jackson Mayo who didn't have a hit. So it was really good to see the bats get going. We're going to need to see more of it, in my opinion, in order for us to really make some noise in the conference tournament. I think our pitching is coming around, but it's like when our pitching starts to come around, our bats are going a little bit quiet, especially from some of our key producers. But all together, just a really sound performance offensively.
Absolutely. I think every game right now, you kind of, what you mentioned is you're kind of looking towards trying to get a trend as we move in towards the conference tournament. But again, that's a huge win for us in the end. Their RPI, I believe, at the time of the game was 19. It's probably going to get higher. Look, like it or not, Florida was not very good in the beginning of the season, but guess what? They're going to host. Whether we like it or not, there's going to be a regional in Gainesville. And guess what? If we manage to win the tournament, probably right where we're going to be. So, hey, maybe it bodes well that we've already got a victory there. You know, might have to come back and win some games there in the future if we are lucky enough to do that. Well, we did keep the winning ways going. We ended up having a game canceled with UNF, as you mentioned, that midweek. But we did go down to Boca Raton and picked up another series win, which was a very, very important series win. It started on Friday night. Corey Braun versus Trey Beard for FAU, probably the marquee matchup of pitchers for the conference because you didn't really get to see Gillespie versus Braun. So, again, this was a – and it was really a pitcher's duel in the beginning. Holy cow, you know, shutout through five. Things kind of started to break open a little bit there at the end. But, yeah, as advertised, what'd you think of the pitching?
I feel like this is a couple weeks in a row where Braun's start was the numbers don't really match up to the performance. His outing was tainted a little bit by that 3-run home run that, I mean, as a viewer, as a fan, I thought could have been the difference in the game when we went down. And I think they went up 3-1 or 3-2 after that 3-run homer in like the sixth inning. And he continued to battle, came back out, and, you know, he got back on the right side of things. He didn't walk anybody, six Ks. Those were his only three earned runs on the day. Four hits allowed in seven innings against a really good FAU team. In my opinion, is just really it's awesome to see. But what confused me was when I liked seeing Bryce Archie come out, right? But then he pitched to like two batters. He walked somebody, and then I think he took like a ground ball to like the chest area, right?
He only faced the two. He took the ground ball to the chest, and then he got an out.
He got an out from that, and the first batter he walked, but then he came out after that, and then we see Newton defy all laws of physics and create, you know, new Newton laws of physics out there, just looking absolutely electric, plus velo, hitting his spots. He looked great, but I just don't understand why Bryce Archie came out. I haven't been able to hear if there was any sort of injury sustained from that ball, that batted ball that he took to the torso area. We hope not, because I don't think we got to see him the rest of the weekend, did we?
I believe we saw him on Sunday.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you're right. Sorry. So that was a little bit confusing at the time, you know, because especially on Saturday, when for Saturday games, we've been seeing some sort of combination of Newton and Archie. So It was definitely perplexing, but it was definitely a win now stance from Hannah's and getting that Friday night game. Austin Newton, I'm a big fan of his, and he just really impressed me from the entire time he was in. He went inning and 2/3, striking out three, only walking one, and didn't allow any runs. But man, his changeup was diving out. Slider looked good. Fastball had to, like there's sometimes we have a clock in terms of velo and on some broadcasts and sometimes we don't, but I would definitely say he was 96 plus that day, and that is just amazing to see. kind of makes you wonder if we're going to start to see Newton in the back end too, because having that kind of presence in the back end, just be come in and be lights out and dominant, is a winning pedigree or winning recipe, you know? So I'm interested to see what happens moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like seeing Archie and Newton on the back end. That's two of our harder throwers that we have on the roster. You bring them in, you say, hey, look, I need you to go get 3 to 6 outs, you know, just depending on where you're at in the game. Throw hard and put it in the zone and let's see what they do with it. And I think that actually plays especially well coming in after Braun, who really, I'm not saying he doesn't have velo, but he is not an overpowering pitcher from the left side. He kind of gets it done with the movement and then the pitchability, kind of working his slider in and out. And so when you see that all game, and then you flip it around, and then you just see a BB from the right side coming in at mid 90s, that's tough to make that adjustment to. Really important here too. Like I said, the starting pitching matchup was as advertised. Trey Beard, probably your favorite to win a conference pitcher of the year. Corey Braun is obviously in that discussion as well, but you saw two of them go at it. But MJ Bollinger is their guy out of the bullpen, and that's the guy we ended up getting to. And we got to him because this team has guts, man. So much guts offensively. We've talked about it from game one with the walk-off on the Friday night against Iowa. Just they never feel like they're out of it, unless you're going to have to really beat it out of them. But the offense does come through late. Ryan Pruitt with a multi-hit game. Carlos Hakame and Sebastian Greco with the only two extra base hits. Look, sometimes it's not going to look pretty when you're facing a guy like Beard, you know? What'd you think?
That's factual. Yeah, no. Hakame just continues to produce. You know, we've seen I pay a lot of attention to, like, the conference leaderboards on the AAC website. And it's been frustrating to see some of our names fall out of there, but one of the most consistent names that we've seen that I'm seeing still on the boards is Carlos Hakame. He's really producing on all cylinders. He's been a consistent piece for us ever since he started getting the everyday starts. And there's not enough I can say about the kid, really. Ryan Pruitt was the only guy with the multi-hit day, but we did see a little bit of, but like you said, I mean, when you're facing a guy like Beard, it's tough, you know? So, we got what we needed to do, get done, and we handled business, you know? Who ended up, leading that rally against, Bollinger?
I'm not sure who led it.
That's right.
That's when Greco and, Hakame and Greco both hit the doubles in the eighth.
Yes. Oh, man, that was electric. So, because,
yeah,
like I was saying earlier, I thought the game might have been over, you know, because
Milan homered in the seventh.
Exactly. So when that happened, we go down 3-2, and that can take the wind right out of your sails. But then in the eighth, we just resilient, like you said, and we came back and fought, you know.
Greco had three straight hits there.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's money, bro. Bollinger was one of the only arm that I highlighted from FAU's team that wasn't in the starting rotation. He was definitely their number one bullpen guy, and I think leads their team in ERA. So getting to him was definitely a pleasant surprise and very welcomed, you know? So.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think what always really gets me about this team is, as I say, they're gutsy, but I think it's kind of an old school gutsy. I think new school, you think of after Milan hits his home run in the seventh, I think in other teams are kind of looking for that guy that's going to hit the next home run. And I don't think that team does that at all. We come in and it's just like it happened in the eighth. It's three straight hits.
Yeah.
This team is not built on the long ball. It's built on grinding it out in the box. And I think that's going to really play well in the tournament time. Look, I can't wait to do our tournament preview. I don't know if we're going to do it this week or we'll do it post ECU when we know the seedings and everything. But Yeah, I can't wait for the tournament preview because there's so much stuff about tournament baseball, you know, that you kind of have to, you don't throw away the regular season, but there's just things that are going to play, you know, and I think that's one of them is teams that can really grind out at bats and can right. really be gutsy, especially on, you know, days three and days four of that. Well, John, do you have any final thoughts about the Friday game before we move on to Saturday?
No, honestly, I was just starting to talk about tournament ball just made me want to keep going on that. So move on to Saturday.
Yeah, yeah, we will. We'll kick it on down. Well, Saturday, again, playing for the series win, ended up picking it up, and that is always fantastic. I believe Nedro got the start in this one.
He did. Yeah, it came out early.
Get this shared.
I think by a comeback from the hand, right?
Yeah, look, comebackers... Comebackers got us this week. Was a 9-4 victory. Aiden Longoria picks up the win in this one. Again, all that playing towards his conference pitcher of the week performances. But Jack Nedro did start it off. As you mentioned, he did come out early. No earned runs. Was three runs, but again, none earned. Again, the hand injury, I think, played into that. He did fight through it, though. I'll give him credit for that. Another strong performance from Corey Kling in this one. What stood out to you?
Honestly, he can go right in the same category as Keyser and Longoria. Another name that disappeared there for a minute. He came back and against Florida, like we talked about, but he was just one of those guys that was almost a shoe-in for like a key back end of the bullpen guy. But I don't know if he may have been struggling with some sort of like undisclosed, undocumented injury or something, because we saw the Corey Kling of old. You know, he's not going to blow you away with velo, but he's got some velo. He's got a good mix of pitches, and then he just came in and settled it down. You know, because we got down early, right, and then he came in and provided that depth from that we needed with our starter exiting early. 5 1/3 innings. 5 hits and 1 earned run. You know, that's he depended on his defense a lot of balls in play. But I'm really, really hoping that this is more of a trend as opposed to a result like we were talking about a couple weeks ago, because I really enjoyed seeing Longoria and Kling, you know, really dominate the boards early in the season, and then those two just kind of disappear. But then, lo and behold, right behind Kling, you've got Brandon Keister and Aiden Longoria, the names we mentioned earlier, coming in for two innings to finish a game, only allowing a hit and no walks, which we didn't walk anybody on the day. That's a winning recipe. But, I mean, we're if we're going to make some noise in the tournament, we're going to need production from all of these guys. You know, it's going to be gritty. It's going to be a bloodbath, and we're going to need people to step up like they haven't stepped up before. And we're starting to see this team ramp up into tournament shape from a pitching standpoint, as well as hitting.
Absolutely. You know, you heard me mention earlier about the importance of Keister and him being that left-handed side, but you know, Longoria and Kling, even though they're righties, they've kind of proven to be an important piece to our success, because when they were successful in the beginning of the year, we were rolling, and there was a lot of high hopes for what this team could be. When they started finding some inconsistencies, that's when everybody started kind of backtracking, right? Back kind of backstabbing, like, oh, is this for real? If they turn it back on, I think you're right. I think, you know, suddenly this bullpen gets really, really deep. And when the bullpen gets deep, you know, that's going to be a really good thing for us leading into the tournament. Think about Kling, man. Like, I think we need to have a case study, because when you look at his game logs, right, if you can go all the way back to last year, it's just there is nothing but zeros and the occasional one in the earned run column, and then you hit UCF and they got to it.
Yeah.
And then it just builds. And then I don't know, was it UF? I think there's a start before you have. Anyways, he comes in and then it's just like, it goes back to it, like we're getting back to the old Corey Kling. But I mean, usually when you have inconsistencies, it's inconsistencies. It's scattered. Up, it's down, it's finding when it, but like you can put clear demarcation lines of right. what's, you know, good and bad. That really makes you wonder about what was going on in that portion, you know?
That's why I was wondering about injury possibly.
That's one of the things, you know, we don't really get a lot of information on that. You don't really want to speculate too much on it, but that is one of the indications, right? That yeah. something was physically different for him
yeah.
During that period. He did get a bit of a break, you know, you know, and then he came back. So maybe that was something, but hey, I hope he's healthy and right. Because like you said, he's going to be an important piece to what we're doing.
You talked about only having one left-handed arm in the bullpen, but I would like to see the splits and lefties for Aiden Longoria, because with that arm slot and his delivery, mm-hmm. he's funky, man. And I really think that he's probably equally as effective against lefties as he is righties. I don't think there's really an advantage when you've got a low three-quarter slot guy like him with so much run on his slide piece, and all of his pitches are just going every which way. When he's on, it's a lot of fun to watch. You know, it's when he's missing middle that, you know, he gets exposed, but he's just been lights out. And I'm hoping that just continues, because I think that he could be highly effective, especially in like small and key points in games where we need to have a guy come in and get two outs, you know, no matter what the matchup is, no matter if he's facing righty or lefty, we know this guy's going to come in and he'll have the advantage because of his stuff. You know, he's got a real funky arm angle and he's got a mix of three really good pitches when he's on. So I'm excited to see how exactly that pans out moving forward and against ECU and in the tournament.
Absolutely. Just real quick point of clarification. I do believe there are other left-handed arms on the roster, but for sure. There is only one that, you know, Coach Hannes has shown enough faith to really use, and that has been Keister. I think we've seen Corbin Little a few times this year as well, but maybe we'll need him too. But Keister is definitely a left-handed arm that we're going to see, and we're going to see in some big spots.
Caleb Puncak too. That's Caleb a guy that's been around for a minute. So no disrespect to those two guys at all, but
no, yeah, but. Just facts. We haven't seen them that often this year. Was a big day offensively for Marcus Brodil, 3 hits, 2 RBIs. Matt Rose, 2 hits, 2 RBIs. This was an interesting day. I think the story for this in terms of the offense is going to be first game all year that we did not have Sebastian Greco and Bracky Laurie in the lineup. We saw Carter Murphy at first base, and we actually saw Rose at shortstop and Puckett at third. No offense to Carter Murphy. I think he's a good young player. I think he's got a really good future for us, but do believe I like it to see Sebastian Greco back at first base. However, oddly enough, not advocating for the substitution of Bracky Laurie in any way, shape, or form at shortstop, but things happen in sports.
Yeah.
And so, up until Saturday, if you had asked me, you know, what's going to happen if Bracky Laurie gets hurt, you know, what are we going to do with short? I'd be like, my guess would probably be either Rose or Hakame, right? But, you know, what would that look like? Well, I don't know. I feel a lot better about it now. I thought Rose was okay, you know, at short. He, you know, it's hard to kind of match what Bradke's done defensively at shortstop, but I think he's a serviceable defensive shortstop. And, you know, 2 hits, 2 RBIs, he's a pretty good guy with the bat. We know Puckett is a guy that we like to get in the lineup. This is a way that you get both of them into the lineup. So, again, not advocating for the substitution of Bracky Laurie at shortstop in any way, shape, or form. But if something were to happen, you know, I wouldn't feel as bad about the way the lineup would look. What stood out to you about Saturday?
Just to build on that point, you know, Matt Rose came into the season and, I mean, we knew who Hakame was, but in my opinion, Matt Rose was the starting second baseman coming into the season. He's a great middle infielder. I think he may have even gotten a couple starts at short last season. I felt really like I was surprised, as just as surprised as you were, to not to see him starting at short over Laurie, but definitely reassuring seeing how smooth he was with his hands. And it's a good problem to have, you know, a middle infielder that generally crosses over when you're playing at a D1 level. It's you see people going back and forth relatively easily, but it was definitely really good to see from him. But from an offensive standpoint, honestly, we almost got exposed, you know, not having Greco in the lineup, because in my opinion, this was one of those games where, you know, the wheels kind of fell off a bit for FAU late in the game. You know, things got really quiet from like the third until like the seventh or eighth inning, and then there was just mishap after mishap for FAU. You know, throwing balls into the outfield on a bunt attempt, and you know, and just some unforced errors on defense that really kind of led to a lot of production, and we capitalized, and you have to do that in order to win, and that just comes into play a lot in baseball. You know, that's why anything can happen, but the wheels definitely fell off for FAU, and we kind of got away with one here, and I'm hoping to see a more traditional offensive lineup moving forward. I don't know the story behind Greco, but I mean, there's a lot of zeros offensively for us on Saturday, but yeah, we put up our highest run total of the weekend. So points to like what happened. What happened was FAU laid an egg, and we took advantage of it.
Yeah, five walks, three hit by pitches. I think a lot of those got compounded into one inning. Towards
Absolutely.
the eight late eighth and the ninth, it got a little rough finding the zone for them.
Three bases to you.
But Marcus Brodell, he had some really big at bats. He's continued to have some big at bats for us. Had some stolen bases. We ran, we got aggressive. I think your point really points to, again, teasing for the conference tournament preview, but it points to, for a lot of these teams, including us, up until when we're good, again, including us, it goes with it. We have a Friday night guy we really love. We've probably got a couple bullpen guys we really love. And then after that, I don't really know what happens. We could be great. We could be, it's a mixed bag. We don't know. And I think that's what you saw here on Saturday for Florida Atlantic. It got away from them late. But hey, Bulls win, right?
I'll take it every time.
Every single time. Unfortunately, we will not pick up the win on Sunday, however, as we move on now. Let me go ahead and get this one brought up. Sorry. All right. As I mentioned, it was a loss, 6-2. Gets away from us in the third. Offense was really dry. We saw Landon York get a start, and this one did not go as well. DeCardenas comes in and gets a pretty decent outing, and then this is where we see Archie come back in and get that 1.1 innings of work. What'd you think, John?
I mean, it was a little bit kind of crazy to see York come out again. You know, it wasn't really short rest at that point. It would have been what, like 5 days. So I mean, should have been sufficient. Some days you got it, some days you don't. He gave up a few hits, and again, that's five walks and two outings for him as a starter, you know, or even as an opener, whatever. But the walks kind of got to him. You know, he only gave up three hits, but there were five earned runs, and that kind of points to, you know, what walks. So you
Yeah,
can't
two of
really
those.
allow free bags, but I think moving forward, we're probably going to see Landon York more so out of the bullpen. I honestly, think that I would have probably liked to have seen DeCardenas get to start here. And hindsight's 20/20, but I think that we were all kind of talking in our group about who's going to get to start today with, you know, with Archie and Newt both kind of looking like back-end options, and with Nedro getting the start on Saturday, we didn't really know what we were going to see for Sunday. I know we already had the series dub, but I would have liked to see a sweep, and I think that Jorge would have put us in a much better position to have done that, because pretty much all of his outings out of the bullpen have been, you know, 3 to 4 innings plus. He's proven that he's got the capability to get to go the distance, and he's stretched out, and he's one of those names where I'm wondering what's going to happen. Tournament, you know, in the tournament, what's going to happen with DeCardenas, because I think that he'll end up getting at least one start in the tournament, because I think we're going to end up seeing Bryce Archie and Newt in the back end, and we're going to need, you know, some people to come out and give us at least three to five innings out of a start. And I think DeCardenas is one of those guys who, if he's not ready, then we'll find that out, but he's got the Cappy seal of approval right now. He's really been lights out. I don't have his, you know, last five in front of me, but if you looked up his last five outings, last 10 outings, there may be one or two mishaps, but for the most part, he's been very consistent for us. The kid's fiery on the mound. He came out and delivered, you know, and kept their run scoring to a minimum. He only allowed one earned and 4 1/3. You know, striking out gave up 2 walks, which 4 1/3 really isn't that bad. And quieted it down when we needed it to be quiet. You know, going down 5-0 in the third inning or 5-1, I believe 5-2. It was 5-2, wasn't it? In the third inning. So, I mean, we got production where we needed it after that kind of suspect outing from York, and then Bryce Archie allowed us all to breathe a big sigh of relief coming in and throwing an inning and a third of perfect work, you know, striking out 2, walking nobody. But at the end of the day, it just wasn't enough to get it done. Our bats didn't really get going, you know, and the bullpen, you know, you like to see the bullpen come through, though.
Yeah, you know, we'll talk about it more on the offensive side in a second. So just pitching, I think it is easy to look at this at 20/20 and say maybe DeCardenas should have been the guy. But I think if you take yourself back before the game happened and you looked at what was – I felt like Yorick deserved that start based on what he had done for Florida.
Absolutely.
You know, and so you had to, like I said, it's worth seeing what's there. Now, what happens going forward, I'm not sure. I do believe, though, these three guys are the formula for our day three. And what I mean is, you know, day one, we go Braun, you got Newt, and you got Arch.
Yep.
Day two, you go Nedro, you got Kling to go. Hopefully, you go Nedro, Kling, game over, done, right? We end that. But then you have Keister, right, that can come in and clean up if Kling can't finish it.
And
Longoria, right? Or whatever you say from that, then comes into this third kind of bullpen day where, yes, you know, it's a starter, but he's not expected to go very long because there are 2 or 3 bulk guys behind him that can go. And then if it gets late, you still have either Bryce or Newton, whichever didn't get the heavy load on that first night, can come back and maybe clean something up and get a, you know, and shut down a save if you need it. That's kind of the 3-day kind of philosophy that I have in my mind.
I like that a lot, though.
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, this game is going to change too much for me. I think I'm going to leave it up to Coach Hannes for him to decide about who is going to be the best person. Because I think what Coach Hannes really likes for starters, particularly, you know, when you're not really sure if he's a starter or not, he just likes for a guy to go out and get ground ball outs quick.
Right.
You know, he wants to get to the third inning quick.
Yeah.
And so I think that'll be the plan. And then go to a bulk guy, you know, that maybe maybe wants to kind of have some longer at bats. But
tell me this, you know, with names like Archie and Newton readily available, do you see York, like, okay, fast forward to tournament or even ECU, do you see York as a back end or more of a middle relief guy? I think he's a middle relief guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think
that's not taking anything away from him.
No, no.
He can provide depth. He's got a good arsenal, but he's not plus
I think he's, I think his stuff is played better in the beginning of games or towards the, you know, the beginning to middle of games. Again, I think part of, you know, Sunday, I mean, Schroeder hit a bomb in the first inning. Now, I think he might have let some people get on before that.
I mean, but Schroeder was top 10 in the conference in home runs.
Yeah, Lipsy scored. That's kind of what I was going to point out. Schroeder's a great hitter who we had kept quiet for 2 days. He broke out.
You know, got a goose egg out of him on Friday, I think.
Right. And so, I mean, you know, he makes it 2-0 right off the bat. And then, of course, he gets a little farther away from us on as it moved on. Anthony Quigley, though, was another guy that is going to get a start here as Mayo would get a day off. He's interesting, man. I mean, he made some catches. He got to some spots in left field where he almost overran the ball, and it was deep in a gap. Like the commentator off the bat is thinking this may be a hit, and Quig's having to slow down, you know, to try to stop to make the catch. Also, he's really got long. Really long.
Super intriguing freshman, man. I think he's got a huge place in our lineup moving forward. Really big. And I'm really intrigued by him.
He does. And I think I love Ryan Pruitt, but I don't know if we can keep that man out of center. I really don't.
He's stereotypical center field material.
He covers so much ground, and that is nothing against Ryan Pruitt. I think you are a fantastic center fielder. But wow, he's fun to watch, man. Especially when he gets two hits, picks up an RBI. He had a big day.
He's got an arm too.
Yeah, you know, it's just crazy that there's really not a lot of room in the outfield right now. But he is he's fun. He's going to be fun.
Could I be the public enemy number one and say that there could be room for him in right field?
Yes.
Not sorry, but I mean, keep Rodell's
the right fielder's got to be in the lineup. I don't care how you do it. Somehow, some way, that man has got to be in. That bat can't leave the lineup.
No, absolutely not. But I mean, so, Rodell put him at DH, and this is just spitballing here.
Yeah, I understand. And we've talked about it, you know, with that DH position with Betancourt, it kind of hinders because he really doesn't have a defensive position. And he's hot. He's been hot for almost a month now, you know?
Yeah.
And so he's another one you can't take out of the lineup. And so it's tough because, I mean, I'm with you. I think this kid, I think he adds something to the lineup that really is game changing in the way he runs.
Yeah.
Definitely changes the outfield in the way he runs.
He's got to build like Ellie. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not but like the way he runs reminds me of Ellie.
Yeah.
I saw him play live in Cincinnati this year, and the strides are almost unhuman. And that's what I see when I see Quigley run.
Mm-hmm.
He's great.
Yeah, and you got to think, you know, with a full season in the lineup, he's going to steal about 30 bases.
And I don't think we've seen enough to put him in over Betancourt or Brodell, but like,
he's not.
That's what these are fun for. We just kind of spitball, throw stuff out of walls, see what sticks.
But it's another thing where you look at it and you're like, you know what? Sometimes things happen. If something happens in our outfield, I'm pretty confident with Quig, you know?
He's first man up for sure.
You know, he doesn't have to hit a double, you know, to be effective.
Singles into doubles for that man.
Yeah, absolutely. Fun. Like I said, just looking towards the future. He's going to be absolutely fun to watch. Well, as always, we were not the only American baseball team playing last week. There was some, obviously some other games going on, and we got to take a look at those because as we inch closer and closer to that tournament, all of these games matter more and more to us. So as I'm bringing that up now, again, these scores are going to be brought to you by D1 Baseball. If you are a fan of college baseball and you don't know about D1 baseball, I'm not sure how you're following college baseball.
In college baseball.
They are the worldwide leaders. The screen hasn't come up for y'all yet.
Yeah, I'm seeing it.
Why are we having so much issues right now? Oh, you're seeing it? Good. It's black on mine for some reason. Like I said, for this new program, we're going to get it all figured out. Last week, Florida Atlantic at South Florida. We took that one, too, to win. Charlotte with a sweep of UAB. That played huge in the series standings or the conference standings. We'll look at that in a minute. Rice picks up a 2-1 victory, or a series victory over Wichita State. And Tulane will pick up a 2-1 victory over Memphis. If you give me a second, because ECU actually played on Saturday. But I believe UTSA won that series. They won the first two games. I think they swept.
Who's that, UTSA?
I know the last game was... UTSA, did they sweep?
No, they played a doubleheader.
Okay, so they did get the last one. Yeah, 2-1. They ended up playing a doubleheader on Saturday or Friday. No, Saturday. Yeah, I guess expecting weather there. So I don't know that there was really a shocking result this week. The sweep over UAB for Charlotte doesn't. I mean, that does kind of well. It doesn't shock me because it was at Charlotte. I think Charlotte's better at home. It obviously sucked for us. It kind of puts us kind of driver's seat adjacent, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know that it matters. And we'll talk again when we start talking our tournament stuff. But, I don't know. Anything surprise you with the way that this weekend turned out?
Horseshoes and hand grenades, right? That's the only thing that almost or close matters in. But, UAB really came close on two nights to beating Charlotte. I think he had like a 6-5 and a 7-6 result. So we could have really used a win from UAB in that spot. But no, I'm really not surprised by any of the results. Rice, we don't know who they are. You know, it's like Rice comes up the rear and then they fold. But then, they get Wichita State and either swept or three. Yeah, and you and I were both hot on Rice. But then they had a series where they just I forget who they played. Maybe FAU or it was a couple weeks ago where they either got swept or two out of three taken from them when they were riding high, you know. But what did they end up doing? They beat Wichita 2 out of 3. Wichita's not a great team, but on paper neither is Rice. So they won in pretty outstanding fashion in the games that they did win. Memphis is starting to pitch pretty well. If you look at the conference standings and as far as pitching goes, Memphis is top 3, top 4 in pitching, ERA. They're allowing like 5 earned runs a game. I would have probably take with the way UTSA is hitting the dang ball right now And with ECU's lack of starting pitching, you know, we'll get to that a little bit later on, but they really only have one quality starter. And I really wasn't shocked by that result. FAU and USF was a series to watch along with UTSA and ECU. And I think what we all expected to happen happened.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, it was the real big shocker, I think, was 2 weeks ago with my upset special where Rice took 2 of 3 from Charlotte. I think Rice is really good in Houston. I think they're a team that is learned. They're kind of in that early process of learning how to win. They're good in Houston, and they're good in Houston on Friday night when Davion Hickson's right, and he's getting right.
Yeah, and Charlotte goes to Houston next weekend, don't they?
Charlotte goes to Tulane. Yes.
Oh, to Tulane. Who's going to Houston? Yep.
No one. Rice is going to San Antonio.
That's what it is. The interstate matchup. Okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Rice will be going to. So, yeah, I think Rice is a low key, kind of dangerous team.
As
we look at the standings here, UTSA is obviously, they have clinched the conference at this point, a 5-game lead at 20-4. Again, Charlotte sitting second, 15-9. The importance of that sweep that we talked about. USF coming in at 14-10. Florida Atlantic, Tulane, 13-11. East Carolina, 12-12. Rice and Rice at 10-14. Memphis, Wichita, 8-16, and UAB rounding it up at 7-17. Interesting point. At one point, I believe it was like 3 weeks into this, UAB was first. And they have now ventured all the way down to the bottom of the conference standings. Look, there's a lot of interesting things that are going to happen here in this next with this next weekend. I mean, UTSA is locked into their spot, but that's about really it. When you could say is a lock, you can group some things. You know, and look, we'll just talk.
Two, three, six. Group,
yeah, you can group, like, I believe Rice, after this guy said Rice is dead at one point this year, like, why are we even considering Rice for anything? Rice is going to make the tournament. I think they are. I think when you look at all of the situations, like, they,
if they get swept by UTSA, there's a chance that they don't.
But here's the thing, Rice and Memphis, Memphis and Wichita State are going to play. And so.
Oh, so they can't both rise. Okay.
One of them also has to sweep.
That is right. Huge for Rice.
And then.
That's big.
Right. Because also, I think the other kicker is this, Rice actually has tiebreakers over all three of them.
Okay.
UAB, Wichita, and Memphis. So.
So they're in.
I think Rice is in. They are not mathematically in. There is a scenario that gets them out, but it would be hard pressed to get to that scenario, I think. So, and I also would be pretty convinced that they're going to come in as the 7 seed, because, like I said, even if they end, you know, they end up tied, they're going to get the tiebreak over whoever ends up being that. So I think they're going to be the 7 seed, and that is important. Because in the tournament bracket, 2, 3, 7, and 6 are the pod that's going to play, seeding wise. 2 is going to play 7 first. So if 7 is Rice, and I think Rice is a heck of a lot better with Davion Hickson on the mound than anything else that happens, I don't want to play Rice first. I would rather not play Rice first. I think they're dangerous. I think they're most dangerous on Friday night. So it's one of those things where I don't know if I want the 2 seed right here. I think the 2 seed and the 3 seed are pretty much the same. I don't think there's any shot in getting the 1 seed. I don't think we want to fall 4 or 5, because that's when you get into the bracket with UTSA. But, I mean, heck, there's a chance we fall all the way to the six.
Yeah, I mean, anything can happen.
Yeah.
I think playing at the red is going to help us, which, I mean, puts a heck of a lot of emphasis on, you know, creating an environment this coming up weekend for the series against CCU. We're going to need everybody to show up and show out. I know that you guys will be there and do your due diligence, but, man, there's really anything could happen with that mix. Do we have the schedule for this upcoming weekend?
I do. I can bring that up real quick. I do know the big one is going to be, like I said, is Charlotte at Tulane. You know, that's going to decide a lot. The other big one is Wichita, I believe, is at it's not coming up for me now. Did I say Memphis?
Yeah.
Why did you go to stats?
Well, while we wait on that, another intriguing possibility is that whoever wins on Sunday in San Antonio, they might just be able to tip their hat and say see you in the first round, and they may end up getting four games in a row against each other, because if Rice ends up the 8 seed, which isn't super likely, but that would be another pretty cool storyline to follow into the tournament for sure, because that interstate rivalry is something to speak about.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know why I got two screens up here right now. But you can see Florida Atlantic will go to UAB. East Carolina will come to Tampa. Memphis will go to Wichita State. Charlotte at Tulane. Rice at UTSA.
Okay.
So, let me see. I don't understand why that is sharing like that.
Some intriguing matchups for sure, though. I would say it's a lot more entertaining of a slate than this past weekend was, you know, just on paper.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if that comes from just the magnitude of tournament being right around the corner. You know, there's a lot of weight with each matchup, but definitely some pretty good baseball to be seen in the American this weekend.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, the Tulane one's important. I think the UAB one is really important for UAB. They're battling for their lives. They're not mathematically eliminated. Florida Atlantic's obviously going to be fighting pretty hard, to fit their spots. And so it's interesting, you know, even UTSA, they're going to have to battle with Rice. I mean, that's probably the least intriguing matchup in terms of positioning.
Right.
So, but it is interstate, and they're going to want to get all that going. But yeah. So why don't we go ahead and try to make some picks here? We'll go ahead and look at the first one. It's going to be Florida Atlantic at UAB. As I'm trying to fix this screen situation. Who do you like in that one? Florida Atlantic at UAB.
I'm taking UAB 2 out of 3.
UAB 2 out of 3.
They play tough. And they can get beard on Friday, anything happens.
Yeah, that's true. I think they're maybe fighting for a little more than FAU might be. I think FAU might look at kind of the same situations we are, that honestly, if you don't get swept, your prospects aren't going to change too much. Right. So don't get swept, I think, is going to be there. So I agree with you. I'm going to go with UAB as well. Next we go marquee matchup, really. Memphis at Wichita State. Winner is in. Who do you like?
I went first last time. You picked first.
That's tough. Listen, I'm going to take a phrase from our friends at 11.7 that says, don't fade the facility. I'm going to go with Wichita. Wichita, Kansas is who I'm picking. So with that, we're going Wichita State.
I like that. Don't fade the facility. And, dude, their field is nice. I will say Memphis 2 out of 3. Pitching
travel. Pitching does travel. All right. Second marquee matchup of the week, Charlotte at Tulane. I'll just go ahead and tell you, I'm taking Tulane. Again, I think it's important that it's in Tulane. I don't know that Charlotte travels outside of Gillespie.
Yeah, I'm taking the same. I'm going Tulane 2 out of 3.
Fantastic. Alrighty. Well, we'll move on now. We'll start looking at the next week's matchup is right. East Carolina. We'll travel into – go ahead. Oh, UTSA and Rice. Sorry, see? Dude, I just forgot about it. That's how much – that's how little I thought about it. Who do you like?
UTSA with the sweep.
That's a good pick.
I think they
– go ahead.
Yeah. I think they sweep. Don't fade the facility, like your boys say. But there's no such thing as sitting your starters in college baseball. There's not going to be any sort of foot off the gas. They're riding high. You know, I think if you ask anybody in burnt blue and orange, they should have swept ECU in their mind. And they're going to want to get right before traveling to Clearwater. And I think that, you know, they're far and away the best team in the AAC as it stands right now. I think they make a statement against Rice, and I think they sweep. I think 2 out of 3 is a safer bet, but, I'm going to say sweep.
Yeah. You know, 20-4, hard to pick against them.
How many losses do they have at home in general? Yeah,
not many. I'm doing it. I'm picking Rice. I don't know what it is, man. Like, I think they're going to get it right. I think there's going to be a bit of a layoff with the fact that UTSA is playing for nothing this weekend. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. They are playing for nothing. They can get swept. And I guess – because they're not even putting in a bid to host. Like, they've already came out and said it, that they're not going to host. So it's like, I don't know. I'm picking Rice. So, all right.
I love
We will now move on, take a look at, or we'll just talk about the game coming up with ECU, or series coming up with ECU. Look, ECU is struggling. I don't know if things are completely right in their locker room or their clubhouse. I don't know that they're getting very good starting pitching, which is what it is, you know. But, John, I know you got some notes about some of their big key performances. So go ahead and let us know what fans can watch out for as they watch this ECU series.
So from an offensive standpoint, we match up with them. Like, I think we're 3rd and 4th in terms of like overall offense as a staff. They come into this week with a team batting average of .284. You know, their OPS is .797. They're pretty low on the totem pole in terms of home runs. You know, they're not hitting the long ball in conference too much, and you know, they've got 180 strikeouts to 86 walks on the season. But in terms of who you got to watch out for with the stick is first is Jack Herring. He's 9th in the conference in OPS, 4th in the conference in batting average. He's got a .368 batting average on the year in conference play and 1.007 OPS with 21 hits. Next is Braden Burris. He's 5th in batting average in the conference at .366, which is very competitive, and 2nd in hits in conference, total hits. And he's got 34 hits on the season, so he gets it done with his stick. And then lastly is Colby Wallace. All three of these guys batting above .300, with Colby coming in at .306 and an .844 OPS. And 30 hits on the season. He's 9th in hits in the conference. their slugging isn't much to talk about. They don't do a lot from a slugging percentage. They don't do a lot from a power percentage, but they have a lot of guys that can hit the dang ball. You know, I'm only bringing up these three names because, you know, you can talk about 260, 270 guys all day, but they had a bunch of those, you know, whereas these were the three notables that really have stood out, and especially over the past 3 weeks. So they're guys that have stood out in, on the stat line as well. They hit the ball, you know, and I think that's probably been their saving grace because they don't really have a low point in their offensive lineup. But from a pitching standpoint, you know, especially in conference play, if you look at season stats versus conference play, their season stats from a pitching standpoint were better than they are now. In conference play alone, they've got a 6.16 ERA. They're allowing teams to hit at a 284 clip against their pitching, allowing 34 home runs, which is second in the conference, second most home runs allowed by a pitching staff, and 67 extra base hits, which is also top three in the conference for how many they've allowed. Listen, it's simple. The only thing that they have that is a surefire bet is Ethan Norby. You know, in past weeks, I like to do my preview of the teams, and every single time it's been six starts, six starts, six starts, seven starts, seven starts, seven starts. We haven't seen fluctuation in their weekend starters. But with ECU, that's not the case. Yeah. The only guy who's got consistent starts is Ethan Norby. He's got seven starts on the season, and 43 innings pitched, through and through the leader and for that staff in those areas. You know, 4.60 ERA, which is not that competitive. 49-16 K to walk ratio. The 49 Ks I will talk about because that's good enough for the fifth in the conference, and he's first in the conference in strike and backwards case. So he's got some swing and miss stuff, but he has gotten hit around at times as well. The three coming in behind him, you know, respectively, have 5-2-1 start on the season. It's a mixed bag. You know, sometimes you're seeing an inning or two out of one guy, and then somebody will come in for five innings after. You got Brad Pruitt, Jake Hunter, and Ethan Young. I mean, really, just the notable things on them is Pruitt's got a plus, like his ERA is 7.08, but he has five starts, you know, so that's notable. And I think that we are going to see him in some fashion. 225 batting average against, which is good enough for top 10 in the conference, as well as only allowing 27 hits in that span. That's good enough for top 10 in the conference. Jake Hunter, really, really good ERA, 3.28, only has two starts on the season in 24 2/3 innings pitched. And he does not walk a lot of guys. 21-4 strikeout to walk ratio. He's top 10 in ERA, batting average against, and total hits allowed in conference. And then lastly is Ethan Young. Only one start on the season, which I think might have been last weekend. But I'm not sure on that. 28 1/3 innings pitch, 4.45 ERA. But a 215 batting average against is pretty dang impressive. All of those guys are, you know, sub 250 batting average against. You're gonna have your opportunities. You got to capitalize on walks because their staff does have quite a few walks on the season. But I think if we play our style of baseball, it should be pretty similar to the FAU series. But we're gonna have to hit the ball. You know, I don't see it playing out like it did last weekend where we get those opportunities. I mean, maybe it does, though, because, you know, you talked about the hits, hit by pitches and walks on Saturday against FAU. Those things come back to bite you in the ass, and they are walking quite a few people, but we can't depend on errors. We're going to have to bring the sticks, and we're going to have to bring the heat, you know?
Absolutely. You know, like you said, I think we're primed up to really pull off a series win. I think it would be disappointing if we don't. I think we're the better team this weekend.
When's the last time we've been able to say that against ECU? Right. Crazy.
And I think it's indicative on both sides. I think we've made a lot of gains, but again, I don't know that things are right. You know, and there's a lot of speculation about what's going to happen with Cliff Godwin in the off season, but
Purdy's going to what? Ole Miss? Yeah, I think
Mississippi State
SEC
has been mentioned. So yeah, we'll see what happens. Well, we are kind of running a little short on time. Real quick, though, before we get out, I do want to look at the final 11.7 midweek rankings. And those are going to be right here. If I share my screen. Yeah. All right, so in a shock, UC Irvine was number one all season. They get taken up by Coastal Carolina. Chanticleer, it's just one of the best names in college baseball. I do want to look at my Northeastern Huskies.
What is it?
It's a rooster.
What is that?
It's a rooster.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, team after my own heart. I got some chickens in the backyard, I'm cool with that. I like that. Weird.
Okay, Northeastern sits at 7 on this. I think they're a team to watch. Mike Lavin does a great job in Northeastern, second alma mater. Go Huskies. Hope you guys have a lot of success. Stetson Hatters is going to finish at number 10. Crichton Blue Jays, led by two former USF coaches and Mark Kingston and Billy Mole. They come in 34-14, having a really good season. Billy Mole aside, I'm going to leave that alone. If you are South Carolina, reap what you sow, because you let go of Mark Kingston because he couldn't take you to Omaha every year in the SEC. And now you are bottom feeding the SEC because you let him go and you went and found some Hall of Fame guy. You talked out of retirement. I'm glad. I hope Crichton does pretty well because South Carolina deserves every bit of it. That's all I got on it. What stands out to you?
Well, now Creighton's got a chance to make it in a basketball conference. You know, they're doing big things in the Big East. Tip the hat to Mole if he still follows. Got a lot of respect for the guy, whatever. But it is what it is, you know. But UC Irvine, Coastal Carolina, those are both perennial contenders. I think Dallas Baptist is elite, and I really like seeing UTSA in that top five. Their strength of schedule wasn't quite there. You brought that up this past week. You know, I think they're outside the top 100 on strength of schedule. How much of that plays into the American Athletic Conference versus – but if you look at their actual out-of-conference schedule, it's really not competitive. So that, I think that's what kind of bit them in the ass in terms of strength of schedule, because we have a – I think we're top five still in mid-majors in terms of conference. But, you know, it kind of goes to show that midweeks don't really matter to these guys either, because, I mean, getting the dub against Florida in the midweek and then the series win against FAU.
They notoriously, they do not move the needle too much week to week.
Yeah.
You're going to move it up, you've really got to put together multiple weeks. And to their credit, they point that out on their podcast. They say, look, this is a power ranking, you know, like we are. And so.
Absolutely. I need to tune into more of their stuff. I'm not real big on listening to podcasts myself.
This is entertaining.
You've spoke very highly on them, and I've interacted with a few of them on Twitter. So it's like I definitely plan on tuning in more. But one thing that I want to point out is USF and Charlotte being back-to-back. Dude, that series was so competitive. Caps off to Woody, you know, for getting the series sweep against this past weekend against UAB. Him and I have been in contact on Twitter a bit as recent as yesterday. But man, they're going to be scary in the tournament, you know. As far as all the rest of them, you know, whatever. You know, I don't care about the MAC in Miami, Ohio, you know. So it's like, give me American and give me all of it. We've got 3, which is probably one of our lowest numbers, you know, in terms of in the top 25 for the power rankings.
We've had as high as 7.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's so. So recently, we've had some teams fall out. We may have knocked FAU out of that top 25. Yeah, I think we did too. Sorry about it, FAU Owl's Nest, but zero sympathy for you guys. But yeah, I think that the biggest thing is USF and Charlotte being back to back. We got UTSA in the top 5, and I now know what a Chanticleer is.
Absolutely.
I think I'm with you, dude. That might be one of my favorite team names, dude. That is awesome. I think I want a hat or a jersey or something.
Yeah. Well, Bulls fans, I believe we are running out of time. I think that's all we have got for this week. Before we get out again, if you can't make it out to the Red on ESPN Plus, Bulls will take on ECU. We do have a midweek that we kind of skipped over against UNF. That will be on Tuesday. Depending on when you're listening to this podcast. And be on the lookout. We may have another podcast coming out later on this week, at least maybe giving you a little bit more of a breakdown on ECU, possibly having a special guest. So, again, be on the lookout for that. Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast as on whatever platform you are listening to. And make sure you're liking on YouTube, as we will now be trying to post out these video podcasts. Again, bear with us as we work out the kinks in these first couple. John, do you have any final thoughts?
We got a sunny day expected in Florida tomorrow, so if they want a reason to cancel, it's going to have to be something other than rain. So, go Bulls! I hope we get that midweek. I think we will, and then we're going to take care of ECU this weekend. And yeah, I'm fired up, and I cannot wait for. Our tourney preview, brother. But thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You do mention that tournament preview. Be on the lookout for that, because I'm excited for that as well. Well, Bulls fans, as always, go Bulls.
Go Bulls.